Roll call.
Roll call for Wednesday, February 11th. Anderson District 2?
Here.
Anderson District 28?
Here.
Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Excused.
Case?
Present.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Kraft? Dockstetter?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Escobel? Geis,
yeah.
Hastert,
yeah.
Hicks,
yeah.
Johnson,
yeah.
Kinski,
excused.
Kinski,
right,
Landon,
yeah.
Meyer,
here.
Pappas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Fladen, Wasserberger?
Here.
President Nicholas.
Nicholas here.
Burns?
Here.
Burns present? 30 present.
Excuse has been removed. If Father Schumacher would please lead us in the prayer.
Let us pray. O saving God, hear us, and make us seekers of light and doers of truth, that we, who have been made in your image as children of light, may worthily be your witnesses before men. This we ask in your most holy name. Amen.
Amen. Please join me with the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 10th, 2015, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chairman.
Are there any objections to the report? There being none, the report is adopted. The Doctor of Day is Judy's husband. Dr. Parks, MD. Dr. Parks, welcome. The nurse of the day is, we have a Kimberly Johnson and Brooke Zabka from Cheyenne Regional Medical Center. Today in history, 1994, a 5.3 earthquake occurred about 50 miles from Jackson. Session status, today is the 22nd day of the proposed 37-day session. It's the last day for third reading on bills in the House of Origin. Last day for third reading. Committee of the Whole for the supplemental budget begins today. I hope you remember what you did. That takes us to the next item, which is reports from standing committees. Thank you, Father.
February the 11th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 86, Board of Cooperative Education Services Meetings, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Coe, Pappas, Rothfuss, excuse, Senator Dockstetter, Senator Coe, Chairman. February the 10th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 3, Engrossed, Free Roaming Wild Horses, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Guy, Senator Guy's chairman.
That brings us to that order of business, bills on second reading. Thank you. Got that? Where did you? Oh, we do have our nurses here today. It's Kimberly Johnson and Brooke Zabka. If you all would stand up, and we'd like to warm give you a welcome. House Bill 3, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 3, Department of Insurance fine schedules.
No amendments, no discussion. House Bill 3, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 13, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 13, State Parks Use of Fees.
We have an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 13, second reading, Amendment 1, to engross copy and corrected copy, page 4, line 6.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. President, I move... Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 13. Ask for your favorable consideration. Fellow senators, this is an amendment that came out of our discussions yesterday on this bill. Tried to improve it and make the changes that were necessary. As you can see on the last page, on page 4, line 6, after the word expended, we did put in there that any of this fund expenditures would have to be approved, have legislative approval. And then we also deleted on that line general operations so that we wanted to make sure that this funding was used for the maintenance cost. And then we also added, just to kind of tighten up the spending ability and also to limit those spending abilities, we added in on line 7, after facilities, provided that no amount shall be expended for additional full-time employers or increases in salaries or overtime pay for full-time employees. And we hope this tightened it up enough to make it acceptable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the amendment? There being none, the question is on second reading, amendment number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion on the bill? Senate File 13, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill. Did I call that Senate File or a House Bill when I said that? Did I say it right? Just in case, House Bill 13, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. I just have a hard time using that word, House. House Bill 19, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 19, Registered Investment Advisors.
House Bill 19, no amendments, no discussion. House Bill 19, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 20, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 20, Clarification of Duties of Treasurer's Office.
There are no amendments, no discussion. House Bill 20, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 22, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 22, Disabled Veteran License Plates.
We have an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 22, second reading, amendment number 1, page 1, line 14.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and I do move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 22 and would ask for your favorable vote. Before we go into that, Mr. Chairman, I don't know, according to protocol, if I should ask for privilege of the floor to explain, to answer a question I got yesterday. So, the question was, are they actually free, the one set of plates to the disabled veterans? Wyoming Statute 313101, registration fees exemptions. A disabled veteran who receives 50% or more service-connected disability compensation from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs is exempt from the fees imposed under subsection A of this section for one vehicle other than bus or motor home owned by the claimant. And Section A lists what you pay when you get a license plate or renew a license plate. So I hope I've answered that question, Mr. Chairman. The question yesterday on general file was making sure they just get one set of plates. And I went into staff and asked them what that would take, and this amendment is what they said would do it. Okay, here we go. On page 1, line 14, the letter OR left some fog in there, so they agreed with me that if they put AND in there, that would make it very succinct and understandable. But to further enforce it, over on page 2, line 5 after vehicle right, insert, the disabled veteran shall receive only one set of license plates under this section. And I could say that that makes it really succinct, and there's no questions that can be asked. So, Mr. President, I'd ask for the aye vote.
Any discussion on second reading amendment number 1? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion's been adopted. We're back on the bill. Any discussion on the bill? House Bill 22 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 23, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 23, Next Generation Science Standards 2.
House Bill 23. No amendments or discussion. House Bill 23 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 33, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 33, Workers' Compensation Premium Experience Modification.
We do have an amendment. If the clerk would please read in the amendment.
House Bill 33, second reading, amendment 1 to engross copy, corrected copy, page 1, line 3.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, you recall the discussion in committee of the whole. The department is in process of redoing their experience rating system in workers' comp, which is how much a firm deviates above and below the base rate for their industry based on their experience. Very important work will help us. You know, the workers' comp fund is fine, but this will help us with the safety record, and the past experience ratings have been shown in this state to improve the safety record, and that's what this bill does. What the amendment does is put one degree of restraint in there. If you recall discussion committee, the whole, they were going to go to a system of two rating bands, the first one of which would be 45% plus or minus instead of being 20% plus or minus as it is right now. And the second one would go up to 85%, and that's what this bill does, is authorize that higher figure. And most of the firms, including some as small as five or ten employees, would be in that higher rating band. So instead of having a 25% plus or minus, they could have an 85% plus or minus. And it was felt that that was going to be quite a shock to a small business and could be quite an obstacle if they have a little bad luck with, say, one bad auto accident and say, something else minor. So what the amendment does is said, go ahead and implement. The system's going to use frequency of claims, wealth, cost of claims. That seems to be universally supported. And then come back and proceed in developing a rate band system, minimum four rate bands instead of the two they've been planning, and report that to the Joint Labor, Health, and Social Services Interim Committee. And the thought is to do that at probably the first meeting in June. We met with the department and some of our counterparts from the other house on this one, came out with this amendment as a compromise. What it will enable us to do is, if there's something wrong with the rating band system, they're going to implement it in 2017 as the plan, and we could come back in 2016 and correct any problems if we find any. I hope that we won't. I think we got the message across that they weren't paying enough attention to the insurance aspect of workers' comp, and we'll be fine, and we'll have something that will give an increased incentive for safety without risking the really breaking of some of our smaller firms. So, Mr. President, I've probably not been as clear as I ought to be, but that's what the amendment does, and I would urge the Senate to adopt it.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. And my colleague from Natrona County did a good job, as a matter of fact, in explaining this. I want to thank him for his leadership. And yesterday we had several lengthy meetings with the department. The concerns I raised and the concerns he discussed about the smaller employers and the effect that the smaller band would have on them, I think this really takes care of my concerns. We have some protections in there to ensure that we do take in consideration the hits of the smaller companies. Very important from my perspective and the constituency that I represent, and then we put the word in shall. So I think this makes this good bill a better bill. I would ask you to support the amendment.
Senator Landon.
President, thank you. The train has taken off from the station already, but I just felt compelled to stand up and share with the body that I'm trying to get up to speed on some of these labor and health issues. And so I called over to the department and got a little bit of a description about where this was and how it arrived here. And it's the work of about a year and a half. And we sent our agency all over the state of Wyoming and pretty fully vetted this bill. And something that was pointed out to me yesterday, which I really don't think we emphasized much, I didn't have time in committee or out here in the committee to hold to really pick up on this, but, you know, the band approach in the bill itself allows for a decrease in payments to the tune of 85% or 45%, and we really didn't emphasize that this pretty fully vetted system that the Joint Interim Committee came back to us with does allow for, with that experience rating, et cetera, it does allow for some decrease in premiums. And I guess my concern is, Mr. President, I just felt like I should at least stand and represent the work of a year and a half on an interim committee, which I did not participate in, and I have great respect for the chairman, but it just felt like this is a little bit late in coming. I guess I'd like a little more conversation about the four-rate band versus two, wondering if that's something that the other side is even going to be amenable to, and if that's the case, maybe we're sending something over there that we can't even get through a conference committee. So thank you, Mr. President.
Let's be cautious not to speak about the other side of the House. It's not relevant what they do, and we don't worry about what the other side... Okay, this debate belongs here on this floor. Senator, you'd be about.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I was going to have a point of order on that very point. Very quickly, Mr. President, part of the process is as we work through these bills that we look at them and we analyze them, we try to make decisions as we move, and this process includes taking a harder look at this. And quite frankly, if you don't have this ban system in there, you don't put this kind of amendment in there, what you do is potentially really do cause harm to the smaller employers of the state. And yes, they're correct. It's had a year and a half to be vetted, but as is the case a lot of times, we don't get to some of the valid points of a bill till it really gets here and we debate it fully. And we needed that in there to protect those smaller employers. That's the whole point of it. We have the latitude to allow the committee during interim to consider that. All we've done is we've allowed the points, the 85% to stay in the bill, so it goes from 65 to 85. That was the guts of what the bill really did. We just provided flexibility to try to ensure that we don't damage those smaller employers.
We're on the First Amendment. Any further discussion back to the movement? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this was discussed in the interim. And frankly, the focus of the interim discussion was they were considering a redo of their industrial classification system to one better adapted to workers' comp that would have been a lot more complex. And the focus of the committee discussions in the interim was in successfully persuading the department that they were going to have trouble implementing that because of the complexity. And they needed to think some further about that, and that has gone away. And so then the rate bands has come to the fore at this point in the process. So there was a lot of discussion, rather fruitful discussion in the interim, but it didn't concentrate as much as it should have on the rate bands because there was a much bigger issue that we got dealt with.
The question before us is second reading amendment number one. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We're now back on the bill, House Bill 33. Any further discussion on the bill? If not, House Bill 33 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection is so ordered. Just before we get started on the bill, with respect to the debate, folks, we debate ideas, we debate ourselves on the floor, and it's not debatable what somebody thinks in another house, downstairs, and that's not to the point, so we refrain from that. Another thing that from today that we need to be very cautious of is that when you refer to the staff, it's not relevant what the staff believe, what they told you. Once your amendment's drafted, it's your amendment. You defend it. But to come out and say that the staff agreed with me or the staff believed that, it's not relevant what the staff is. They are neutral parties to draft your amendment. Once you're here, it's your amendment. You defend your own amendment. And we have to be cautious not to bring the staff into our discussions. House Bill 41, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 41, Barbering License Requirements.
No amendments, no discussion. Maybe we do have an amendment. Do we have an amendment?
No.
Okay, we'll lay this bill back then. House Bill 41 will be laid back.
Till tomorrow.
That's what will happen then. House Bill 41 is going to be laid back until tomorrow for second reading. House Bill 40, second reading of the bill. Here you go.
House Bill number 40, Insurance Adjusters Portable Electronic Devices.
House Bill 40, any amendments, discussion? House Bill 40 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 67, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 67, Wyoming Retirement System Amendments.
Any amendments? No discussion. House Bill 67 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 70, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 70, Omnibus Water Bill Construction.
No amendments, no discussion. House Bill 70 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 72, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 72, Volunteer Firefighter and EMT Pension Account.
We have an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill number 72, second reading, amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 9, lines 1 through 2.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 72. Members of the Senate, we had some great discussion about this, and the concerns raised by our president talks about some of the language you have in terms of protecting the state about obligations to these various retirement funds. And if you go into our statutes under Wyoming Statute 9-3-428A, is language that we have for the big plan and several other plans. If you look at our bill, the engrossed bill on page 9 under subtitle B at the top of the page, there's language in there that afforded protection to the state. The reason we had that language in there, it's a language that has always been involved with the Volunteer Fireman's Plan. What this amendment does, Mr. President, is it deletes B, which is the language you have had in there for the Volunteer Fireman's Plan, and we bring in the language under Wyoming Statute 93428A, which is the big plan language. And if you look at your statutes, the first thing you might see is, well, why don't we have all of those various subtitles in there? The reason being, Mr. President, as we put in under B under the amendment, we put in one little I and two little I, which is language that's almost exactly like the Wyoming statutes we have for the other plans. But we don't add the additional language because it's already contained on page 9, starting on line 5 under subtitle C. So, Mr. President, what this does, in my opinion, it creates a situation where we have the same language for protection of the state and the state's obligation to this vol fire combination EMT bill as we do to the big plan. I would ask that you support this amendment.
Discussion on the amendment? There being none, the question is, second reading amendment number 1, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. Any further discussion or amendments on the bill? There being none, Senate file.
Mr. President.
Oh, excuse me, Senator Perkins. Missed you there.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. President. You had asked for a number of documents. We've got those here. If you want, I don't know if you want to visit about there, if you just want them copied and distributed. What would be your pleasure, Mr. President?
I'll look them at lunch, and then we'll decide whether it's voluminous or not.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? House Bill 72, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I move the third reading consent list, which is as follows. House Bill 8, Landowner Identification, Indemnification. House Bill 10, Education, State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement. House Bill 14, Electronic Citations. House Bill 57, Health Insurance, Medical Necessity Reviews, and House Bill 71, Nursing Education Programs.
Would any members like any of the bills removed from that list? House Bill 14, is removed from the consent list. Any others? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 8, Landowner Indemnification. House Bill 10, Education State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement. House Bill 57, Health Insurance Medical Necessity Reviews. And House Bill 71, Nursing Education Programs. The Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
On the consent list, Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks. Johnson.
Aye.
Hinsky.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Roth.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 aye. House Bill 8, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 8, 30-I. House Bill 10, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 10, 30-I. House Bill 57, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 57, 30-I. House Bill 71, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 71, 30-I.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 8, 10, 57, and 71 have passed the Senate. House Bill 145, third reading of the House bill. Let me have that back, please. Senate File 145, third reading of the bill.
Senate File 145, Hospital Uncompensated Care, sponsored by Senator Peterson. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 145, third reading amendment number 1 to substitute bill, page 4, line 13.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 145 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, if you look at the handout that was given out when we first saw this bill, if you go to page 4, that is what as this bill has now evolved through amendments, this is what happens if you go over to column 3, total share of $5 million appropriation. That is the exact amount currently under the bill that you're going to see hospitals getting. If you look over to column 1, that's what their cost of charitable care is. So those hospitals that are listed as acute versus critical access, the breakdown on this is that those that are critical access are going to get about 48% of their charitable care costs reimbursed by the state under this bill. If you happen to be on the wrong side of that line, you're going to get about 7% of your costs reimbursed. I understand the idea here was to help favor the small hospitals, because the big hospitals supposedly had the resources and to get past this. I think what's happened because of this and because where that line was drawn, you've caught and victimized a number of hospitals in the backswing, such as my home hospital and the hospital over in the neighboring county to the west here, and to a lesser extent hospitals over in Fremont County. So what I've done with this amendment on page that goes on to page 4 is I've raised the level of beds, because the difference where this line is drawn is at 25 beds. I've raised that level to 100 beds. Because just because a hospital has more beds doesn't mean they necessarily have more resources. What that will do, we're keeping the one-third, two-third ratio in there. What that'll do was, for all the other hospitals, it'll lower them, their reimbursement to everybody on that lower list to about 40%, and it'll keep it pretty close to the 6 to 7% for the top three hospitals on this list who have the resources and assets to help. But what it does is it swings in and helps those hospitals in these smaller communities that don't have the resources. What you've created with current legislation is a gap in there. And these hospitals may have more than 25 beds, but they don't necessarily have the resources to help with their charity care. And as a matter of fact, in some ways, they're worse off because their charity care bill is higher. So, Mr. President, I would ask for the body's favorable vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, and I'd urge the body to resist this amendment. We made every effort to make this distribution formula as fair and equitable as possible, and in so doing, we utilized federal designations, state recognized designations, critical access versus the acute care hospitals, the larger hospitals. And I would somewhat disagree that I can explain these designations, and I can explain the distribution formula by using those designations. What I can't explain is going from those designations and then redrawing another line. The number of beds do make a difference, so much so that the designation is based on the number of beds. If I have 100 beds in a hospital, that's pretty good justification that I can keep some of those, most of those, the majority of those beds occupied. If I'm operating a hospital with 25 beds and I can only keep half full, you get my point. I mean, this is a federal designation. It's there for a reason. And in our efforts, we tried to use those federal designations as we were talking about this uncompensated charity care and the challenges that these smaller hospitals are facing, as well as the larger hospital, there's no doubt. But there is a reason for those designations. And this amendment simply is ignoring that designation and saying, you know, let's make up our own rules. And so I'd ask the body to resist this amendment. We can explain things as they are right now with this distribution formula using the rule book. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Bebout, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I would urge the body to vote for this amendment. And as I was listening to the arguments presented by my colleague from Sheridan County, it does make a lot of sense if you're really trying to help the smaller, and to me, the breakover point rather than 25, 100 does make sense, and I think this is a decent compromise. We keep the two-thirds, one-third in, so I'd ask the body to support the amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I don't have the spreadsheet. I don't know whether this amendment helps me or hurts me, but I got a question. The question is that, If you put a whole bunch more hospitals in the lower two-thirds that has two-thirds of the money, why didn't you raise it to 80%? Make it 80-20? Because it seems like what you're doing here is that the three biggest hospitals are just going to get a larger percentage of the total pie. And so and the smaller hospitals are going to get a smaller percentage of the total pie. And what you're basically doing is that if you change the beds from 25 to 100, you probably should have went to 80% or maybe even 90% for the lower tier. And seems like when you get doing arbitrary numbers, sometimes things just get out of whack. I'm not so sure whether this is a good one or a bad one for me, but I would say if it was going to be done right, you wanted to put a lot more money in the bottom part. So I guess I'm against it, Mr. President.
Any further discussion before the movement takes his second turn? Back to the movement, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, the idea of a designating acute versus critical care hospitals, that designation has absolutely nothing to do with the distribution of money in this bill. That was just an arbitrary line that was picked by the sponsors of the bill. And if you happen to look, it happens to benefit their hospital the most of any of the hospitals on the list or in the state. So I don't necessarily blame them for that. We all do a lot of that. But I am concerned by the point that was made by the good senator who just spoke from Goshen County, and I think he actually has a point. And with that, I would ask that, without objection, this bill be laid back for a day so that we can adjust that ratio.
I think an objection is made because this is the last day for third reading for Senate files. I think the sponsor of the bill would object. We're on third reading amendment number one. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. We're now back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Senator Von Flatern.
Just to repeat what the Senate, the Appropriations Chair said a couple days ago, they'll be back. This is not a cure. This is just a very, very, very small now Band-Aid to be put on these hospitals. You know, vote for the bill if you think you're doing your hospital some good, but the reality is you're not curing the problem.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill, folks. I think the last amendment points out the very problem with this bill. Mark my words, folks, you will be back, and we will be picking winners and losers. Remember that while we all feel that we want to help these hospitals, this is not the vehicle to do it. And by doing it, you're taking our budget underwater.
On the bill, Senator Anderson.
On behalf of small hospitals in my district, I would simply say that they're desperate. You know, when you're desperate for a drink of water, you'll take a cup or you'll take the whole gallon, whatever you can get. The idea being that some of these small hospitals, at least one I know of, is making their payments, some counties are making their payments for uncompensated care out of road and bridge. That's how desperate they are. We've talked throughout, none of us have this big problem of health care figured out. We talked about in another bill, a big bill, a lot of debate in regard to how we're going to wait. We're going to buy some time. Yes, it's a one-time appropriation. It's a one-time shot, but it buys some time for these people who are in a desperate strait, in which we can then figure something else out. I urge your passage of the bill.
Senator Raffas, Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill, this problem didn't sneak up on us. We knew this was here. We knew this was coming. We have a budget process. That budget process has provided some priorities. We'll be arguing about those priorities. But at the end of the day, as the Chairman of Appropriations has indicated, these are funds that are competing against other funds. This is not a efficient, useful, matched expenditure. There are much, much better ways that we could accomplish this and could have accomplished this if we had diligently worked on it. But as it stands right now, this is really just throwing money at a problem and not enough money to actually make a difference on the solution of the problem. We do have higher priorities, in my view, in terms of expenditures for the state. To the extent that this is not an efficient use of those funds, I hope the body will resist this and potentially try and find some other solutions, identify some other future considerations. But, Mr. President, even if every one of these dollars went to our hospital, I'd probably still oppose it, although I'd consider it.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, on and for the bill, I think we had a good discussion on second reading committee of the whole, and you know, folks, we do all have priorities. This isn't the only bill that's or the only expenditure that's putting us in the red at this time as far as our budget. We had other options too, necessarily not competing interests. There are other funds out there and other coffee cans that we can avail ourselves to. But we do have, I think, to acknowledge that there is a problem, that this bill goes, I think, a long ways toward realizing that problem within our hospital community. And folks, you don't want to have your hospitals get to the point where you're going to have administrators pull out of here. A lot of the hospitals in my area are administered by a company, a large hospital company that's based in Arizona. And these guys are, you know, the things have got to work. The hospitals basically have to at least break even, or they get shut down. And I've got one hospital in my area that, although it's not administrated by this company in Arizona, essentially they're basically just a part-time clinic with adult care attached to it. I mean, it's no longer a hospital. And that's what you're going to see a lot of these small hospitals gravitate toward. You're not going to have any place when that EMT picks you up to take you to where you can actually get just a little bit of care to tide you over till you get to a larger hospital so you can actually get some work done on you. You know, we're a rural state. We need some services. And this is a stopgap measure to make sure that these things will be around here next year when we come back.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on and for this bill. Yes, this problem has been growing for some time. It's a combination of the changes that are taking place in health care and the effects of the national reform, the harm that that's done, and the fact that we've contributed to the problem by paying in the Medicaid program significantly less than the cost of the services that the hospitals are providing. It's a complicated problem. It's a moving target. As your health chairman, I'm getting increasingly concerned that we're going to lose a hospital or two that we cannot afford to lose, that will put too much of our population more than an hour away from hospital services. And I would point out, for example, if you have a stroke, you need to be able to get to a hospital within about an hour so they can figure out which kind of a stroke it is
Is it a hemorrhagic stroke, or is it the kind that is caused by a blockage, which is the more common kind, but the treatment for the blockage will kill the patient with a hemorrhagic stroke? So you need to have hospitals adequately geographically distributed. And will we be back? You bet we'll be back. This problem is getting worse. This is a stopgap. But it will help us get to the point where we can get a better handle on what's happening and what the continuing evolution as the effects of the Affordable Care Act, as the effects of new medical technology play out. So we'll have a better handle on what we can do. And as far as the budget goes, this does take the money that was theoretically available for the floor. I think a minor tweak or two to the budget bill, or maybe a not so minor tweak or two to the budget bill. I think I know some places it can be tweaked. I think we can afford it. And it is a responsibility that we do have as a Senate. So I would urge passage of the bill.
Senator Bebout, Mr. Majority Floor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple things for the members of the Senate to consider. And I'm not going to argue about the perceived need out there. I think probably a lot of these smaller hospitals have that. What I would like everybody to consider when you make these decisions is sometimes stopgap and Band-Aid work, sometimes they don't. This is an issue that's been coming in for many, many years, and the problem I'm having, members of the Senate, is trying to really get into and understand we have bad debt that's presented by these hospitals of $156 million. Then we have charity care, but then in another place we talk about uncompensated care and how those numbers add up. And the problem I'm having when you look at certain hospitals, particularly a couple in Fremont County, they're the lowest on the list, yet we have all the same issues that other hospitals have, and why they would be that way, and I haven't had an opportunity to talk to those people, but it seems to me it's in the way we bill and how we do things. And just a simple example might be when you go into the ER, you know, you walk in the door and automatically there's a substantial charge for walking in the door, and sometimes it could be something simple as a cold, but you went into the ER to get a particular type of medication or a script for that. Well, they charge you $750 or $1,000. Is that uncompensated care? Is that charity care? And what are the actual costs of that hospital? Is it the $1,000? I would submit to you probably not. So I would just ask you to consider it and be very careful in this decision, because a lot of unknowns are out there. We're making decisions not fully understanding those unknowns. And it should be vetted. And I think this is a great thing for the Labor Committee to look during the interim. And I would ask you to be carefully consider your vote on this one.
Senator Peterson.
President, everything's been said right on, spot on, except for the comment that we haven't done our due diligence on this issue. I mean, I've had the challenge of serving on labor and health now for the last couple of years, and this is all we've been dealing with pretty much, is the Affordable Care Act, what that represents to the state of Wyoming. Our co-chairman on labor and health has traveled to Washington. Mr. President, my suggestion is we ought to buy her a private jet. I would probably save money. That's how many times she's gone back to Washington to try to get answers. Talk about solutions. Talk with other states. We've done our due diligence on this. The problem is our federal partner is instituting something here that has, as mentioned before, so many moving parts, has so many effects that we can't get our hands or our head around this whole situation. And so, but in the meantime, we have our safety net, not Medicaid, safety net, base our hospitals, our providers, our dentists, our doctors, mental health care professionals. In a lot of cases, they're working for free on their dime. That's the fact. And we've tried to show you the figures of uncompensated charity care. It's a very real figure. We're not making that up. These are claims that our hospitals and providers are saying, this is how much we're writing off. We have no intention of collecting these amounts. Some questions. I just had some information, Mr. President, that was handed to me from our hospital association, and this was a question that was asked. What was the cash reserves of these hospitals? And the goal of most hospitals is to have somewhere around 170 days, 200 days in cash reserves build up. The average of the prospective payment system acute care hospitals, that's the PPS acute hospitals, those are larger hospitals, the average is 205. It ranges anywhere from 146 to 272. The critical access hospitals average is 97 days, ranging from 238 on the high end to 19 days, less than a month. So, the seriousness of this is I'm operating a hospital and I have 19 days in cash reserves. And I guess the question is that hospital in jeopardy? I mean, really, are we going to lose a hospital this year, next year, 3 years from now? You know, we lost one in Niobrara, and it's come back under the acute or under the critical access hospital designation. And yes, there are some advantages to being a critical access hospital. There are some big disadvantages, though, number of beds. And Mr. President, granted, we do some things for these hospitals, SLIB grants. In two of the three hospitals that I represent, they're undergoing some additions, small, but some additions, on SLIB grants. That doesn't address the issue of, just because, you know, when I've used the term sky cranes, every time I pass by a hospital, I see a crane. And we have that assumption. But in these two smaller hospitals, these additions are on SLIB grants. A small match. And the issue that I have to ask myself is, does that address the payroll on a week-to-week basis because they're adding on? No. And so this figure of 19 days in cash reserves, that's more to the issue of making payroll. So, but granted, we do things for these hospitals, yes. The acute care, the critical access, 101 reimbursement because of that smaller designation, the ability to spread those payments out of non-collectibles is limited to these smaller hospitals. The comment was made that we're going to be back here next year. Yep, we're going to be talking about, again, Medicaid expansion. What we're going to do as a state to try to address that. This is a stopgap measure. It's not the best solution, admittedly. But it's, I think, the most that we can do this session for these hospitals that are out there hurting and provide our safety net for these important and critical services. Not only to the counties and towns that they operate in, but to the entire state. And we tried to be as fair as possible, working through this process, Mr. President, with these federal designations, critical access, acute care. We've taken their form that they submit, that's vetted, that's audited, that's settled upon, that the federal government recognizes and the state recognizes. So we've done our very best to try to give the accurate picture of what we're trying to tackle. And so I'd ask your favorable consideration, Mr. President and body, on this important bill. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Roll call on the bill.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon? Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins? Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 19 aye, 11 no.
Senate File 145, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 145 has passed the Senate. House Bill 14, third reading of the bill.
House Bill number 14, electronic citation, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, when I read this bill, I had a little bit of concern because the current fee goes to the Judicial Systems Automation account. And we're getting in there and I guess adding a little bit of areas where that where those fees can be spent, and that's for an electronic citation system. And, you know, not either for or against an electronic citation system, but just a concern, Mr. President, that the automation systems aren't going to be finished before we jump in and start spending money in another area. And I'd like to get a little bit of, I guess, comfort level that some of that might have been discussed, because I don't recall it being discussed on the floor, that these systems were already taken care of at the local level. And I just feel a little uneasy about this one, Mr. President.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just having been involved a little bit in this, and then I'll let the judiciary, judiciary come back clean up on this one because it was their bill. But having looked at this and been involved in some of the court automation processes, what this bill does is right now there are only about, I think there are only 7 municipalities that are involved in the current automation site, in the e-site system, electronic citation system. And so the effect of this bill is to allow any city or municipality, county, municipality that enters into this now can join into the system, and allows, when you do that, then every case that's filed, there's a $10 automation fee that goes on top of all that. And so that $10 automation fee now, instead of the towns and municipalities, once they enter into the system, when they collect that fee, they would send that off typically to the judicial branch, who will then put it in their court automation system as they continue to work to automate. The Supreme Court's pretty much automated. The circuit courts are getting there. They're working on the district court automation. But this brings new in. It allows them to, instead of send all of that, they would divert and maintain half of that so they can begin to transform into the C-site system. So as you look at that, what has to happen in this ultimately is if you get about 7 more municipalities coming in, then it'll be everything above that will actually result in additional income to the court automation system that's not there already. So if 7 municipalities join, it'll be about a wash, depending on how many citations are written. It'll be about a wash. If it's more than that, then there'll start to actually be a net gain to the automation system statewide. At the same time, it allows these municipalities to retain this so they can operate and move into this. It's not an inexpensive process, but if there's not 7 that come in, I don't know that such a drain it'll have a material effect on the court automation process as it moves forward. I don't know if that's helpful, but I think that's where we're at.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, excuse me. The good senator from Intronic was right. Again, this is just a bill to allow the towns to be able to get access to some of the money that's available out there is already being put into the pot, helps them fund some infrastructure. Nothing more, nothing less. The county courts, Supreme Court, they already have access to it. It's just a way to, a mechanism to allow the towns to participate. If you have a town in your district, you might want to think about supporting it.
Discussion on the bill? Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed, 30 aye.
House Bill 14, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 14 has passed the Senate. Senate files, excuse me, House Bill 16, third reading of the bill.
House Bill number 16, Offenses Against Public Administration, sponsored by the Judiciary, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read in the amendment.
House Bill number 16, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 10.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 16, ask for the body's favorable consideration. Folks, this is a subject that I've been trying to work on here for a few days, and really the reason for it was just some rumors going around that legislators or the executive branch or different people might be taking advantage or possibly taking advantage in the future of the Amendment 4 funds. I listened intently to the discussion that we had over the last couple tries on this, and I think we've addressed all of the different points. I think we've got it in the right section now, and on page 3, and we've narrowed it down. It's basically a misdemeanor, but a $5,000 fine now under this section rather than a felony. It goes into on lines 12 and 13 of the amendment is the economic development loan, and that's your Article 16, Section 12. It's funded by appropriations because that's how that has to happen. If you recall, when we did the project up in the good senator from Cody, it was a two-thirds vote on appropriation in that bill. We go into and basically say that if you declare a conflict or you're otherwise excused from voting on it, then that doesn't apply. There were some discussions about what if I had some stock in a stock portfolio and I didn't know it. That's an unintended consequences. That's taken care of in line 19, Romanet I, as far as 1% outstanding equity. Then there's some discussion about, what if I'm a contractor and I'm going to do work on that job? And that's in Romanet 2, provision for that. It's a bona fide arm's length transaction. And then there's some discussion, well, what happens when I get out of the legislature? And that is in Romanet 3, and that's the prohibition expires 12 months after you're out of your term of office. So I think we've got it tightened up. I think we went into every one of the the specific problems that we would encountered in the discussion and the debate. I prevailed upon the tall senator from Natrona County to help me with that, and the good senator from Albany County to also help me and give me some drafting cues, which from time to time I do need drafting cues, Mr. President. And I thank you for that, Mr. President. But, folks, if you have any questions on that, I'd stand for questions. But I think we got this in the form and manner that addresses the problem and lets everybody know out there that we're in the business of economic development, but we're not in the business necessarily of developing our own economic development.
On the amendment, Majority Floor Leader Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just some questions of the sponsor. First of all, you said that you perceive there's a problem out there. I'd like to know more. I have not heard about a problem. And the next question would be, clearly, we all take very seriously conflicts of interest and those kinds of things, and we're public servants. We come down here to do what our constituency elects us to do, and all of us have other lives and other things we do. And I take it very seriously, like everybody in the body does. It's in the Constitution, it's in statutes, and we also have it in our rules. What does this do that obligation does not do to us in terms of a conflict, other than to say after the fact? And that's another issue that, you know, you could have a situation where you might vote on something and it's a year or two later after the fact that this might happen. And I wonder about that kind of exposure as well. The last thing, Mr. President, is why, you say a loan, and it's, and I think we're trying to take care of Amendment 4 situations. I'm not sure. What about a grant? What about other sorts of funds that are out there available where obviously if there's conflicts, we would stand up and do what we're supposed to do and recognize and respect our Constitution and declare that conflict? Why so narrow instead of, but that's why we have the broad constitutional provisions in our statutes as well. So just some questions, Mr. President.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment, as to why the necessity, I know of no case where this provision would have been violated, anything that's happened, and certainly in the time I've been in the legislature. But where you get an economic project that's important to a community, you can get one of us down here representing our community being a passionate advocate. And that has the potential for starting rumors that so-and-so that advocated something had some kind of financial interest in it. And this is preventive medicine. You know, you can say that's illegal. It would prevent somebody from applying. And I think that's useful protective medicine to have in there, useful precautions, so that that sort of thing doesn't get falsely started. And I think that alone justifies the amendment. We do sometimes with these particular Amendment 4 things see particular projects that are going to benefit particular communities, and the potential for that sort of thing is obvious, and this is preventive medicine, so we don't get into any kind of trouble. So for that reason, I would urge the adoption of the amendment, and it is narrowly targeted on the amendment, what used to be called Amendment 4 process. It's in our Constitution that does require that separate two-thirds vote, and I think that's appropriate. We have had occasions where members are potentially benefit directly or indirectly from, say, water projects and things like that, and I think people have been careful to declare conflicts of interest on that sort of thing.
Senator Bonflater.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think there's some unintended consequences that could come out of this, one being the bona fide arm's length transaction. That's a definition that I know my accountant says it regularly to me and says, are you sure that it meets some criteria, and I never really saw the defined criteria because it is very subjective. So there's one issue that could happen. Number three, little triple I, says the prohibition shall expire 12 months after your term of office. Well, there's many people we meet outside these two doors here that used to be legislators, and if they're working for a company that's got the economic development loan, is that a conflict? And then I assume that it means state economic development loan funds and not anything to do with federal government, because you could receive those, and are you in conflict there? And then there's always that, as was mentioned by the tall senator, you know, there's always been that issue of some water projects, some agricultural loans. You may claim a conflict, and that's fine. You don't vote on it, but you may be one of the bigger beneficiaries of that particular economic development loan. So I think there's unintended consequences if we put this in there, and I ask for you no vote on it.
Further discussion on the amendment before the movement takes a second time? Back to the movement. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I think we're looking at a few things that are going bump in the night. I think we take the unintended consequences out of this from the standpoint that all you have to do is declare that conflict of interest. And if you have a water development loan or if there's another loan out there, then you declare that conflict. You do it in the light of day. Now, if you don't do it in the light of day, then people, I think, have the thought that maybe you're hiding something, you know. And so then that's not an unintended consequence. That's a intended consequence that you didn't declare a conflict. So there's nothing unintended about that. I think it's clear that we're talking about the Economic Development Loan Fund. So that's essentially your Title 16, Section 12. And the reason we're bringing this up now is that we haven't done any of those until we did the one up in Cody. And there's a potential of $240 million that could go out of this state, you know, I mean, out of our PMTF and go to economic development. That's a lot of money. It's not $50,000 on a farm loan for an irrigation equipment. It's not our water development program. It's essentially this title, Article 16, Title 12. So it's fairly narrow. As far as and I'm trying to remember the question from the good senator from the Riverton area, but I think it's taken care of in the term of office, so the appropriation is funded during the approval of the term of office. If something happens after the term of office, then it doesn't apply. So, Mr. President, I think we've tightened it up. It's the same kind of language that we have in other areas, but it's basically specific to that large amount of money that might come forward in the process with Amendment 4.
On the amendment, third read, number one, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment's passed. Division having been called for, all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand.
Should I ask for a roll call on that one?
The amendment failed. We're now back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Third reading. If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
No.
B. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hick? Hastert? Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote. Barnard, no to aye. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 26 aye, 4 no.
House Bill 16, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected the Senate, House Bill 16 has passed the Senate. We have standing committee reports.
February the 11th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 73, Engrossed, Development of Education Standards, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Pappas, Rothfuss, excuse, Senator Dockstader, Senator Cole, Chairman. February the 11th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 47, Shipment of Wine, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, Von Fladern, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 11th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill Confidentiality of Participants Involved in Execution. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, Von Fladern, no, Senator Escobel, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Do we have any messages from the House? Mr. Majority Floyd Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I make the announcement, it's the intention of the Majority Floor Leader to work those bills that are on the board before we get to the Senate File 1, which is the Appropriations Committee, the whole discussion. And, Mr. President, some of those have been discussed by committees this morning, and they're coming back, so we may have to bounce around them. With that, Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself in a committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. Senator Anderson, 02.
Thank you.
Committee of the Whole, come to order. First reading, first bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 3. Reading clerk will read the resolution.
House Joint Resolution 3, Free Roaming Wild Horses, sponsored by the Federal National Resource Management Council. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural State Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis. Senator Geis, Chairman.
What's your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee the whole rise and report it do so with a do pass on House Joint 3, Free Roaming Horses. There is an amendment. I'd ask that that amendment be read in at this time, please.
House Joint Resolution 3, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1 before line 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Amendment Number 1 to House Joint 3 and ask for your consideration, and I'll wait for that vote before we discuss the resolution.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the first House Joint Resolution Number 3, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We are now back on the House Joint Resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a joint resolution requesting Congress, state, local authorities to take action to prevent damage and remediate damage caused by wild horses. And the amendment is changing throughout the resolution wild horses to feral horses, because that's what they are. They're feral horses. So as we continue to talk about this resolution, which is, I'm not sure, is as good as the paper it's written on, but resolutions do have some effects. I know they're like kissing your sister, but I think this has got some real benefits. And I won't go through all of the whereases, but I will ask you to turn to page 5 in section 1, now therefore be it resolved that the Wyoming legislature calls on Congress and federal agencies to adequately fund, support all efforts to manage free-roaming horses on rangelands in the West, utilizing all management and control methods authorized. I want to touch briefly on control methods. There are several contraceptive methods which are being used or thought about being used. One is called porcine zona pellucida, which is not important. It's an injection, and it will sterilize or at least provide contraception for up to, we think, about a year. That's one of the methods that is being considered. But I would urge the body to pass this resolution, to pass it on forward, and to tell Congress and the federal government that we are indeed concerned about free-roaming horses. And I urge passage of this resolution.
Questions? Senator Scott, go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, quick question for the veterinary expert in the Senate. Is it feasible to spay a horse?
Go ahead, Senator Emmerich.
To the tall senator from Natrona County, yes, it is. And it is a rather extensive piece of surgery. It's not done like it is on pussycats and puppy dogs through the midline. You come in through the side, you have to reach in, find the ovary, which are very large. Then we use what's called a chain crazier to go in, wrap it around, and then you tighten it down and it squishes it off. Then you have to go find the other one. It's an extensive. Yes, they can, but that's tough.
Other questions, other comments in regard to the joint resolution? Hearing, seeing none. Are you ready for the question? All in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Joint Resolution Number 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That House Joint Resolution Number 3 has passed the committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 5. I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
House Bill Number 5, Property Tax Refund Program Extension, sponsored by the Revenue Committee.
What's your play? Oh, just a minute.
It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kingsey, Landon, Peterson. No, Senators Case and Driscoll. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
What's your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee of the whole rises to report that I do so with a due pass on House Bill 5, Property Tax Refund Program Extension. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation on the bill, I turn the time over to good Senator from Natrona County, Senator Landon.
Go ahead, Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your Revenue Committee brought you House Bill 5. To be honest, this is a little bit of a cleanup effort, fellow senators. This was language, House Bill 5 represents language that was allowed to sunset. That was just an oversight by some of us in the legislative body that simply did not catch this tax refund program. Mr. Chairman, I have done a little bit of homework with the help of some staff folks, and I would point those out to you. There are a couple of handouts in your bin, hopefully, that will give you an idea of exactly what this tax refund does. And knowing that we like to see what kind of impact that has back home, I would call your attention to the legal-sized handout. That gives you an idea of the history of this program over the past 3 years. Just a couple of things about this. As I said, the language in this bill was allowed to sunset, and so what you'll see in there is actually language that was already in our statutes, Mr. Chairman. This dates back. We've had a property refund program, as near as I can tell, since 1997, Mr. Chairman. It's been modified several times by this body, but as it currently exists, you will find that language in the bill. The work of a task force years ago pointed to this particular tax remedy, tax relief, as primary among what they would recommend. In committee, we heard some testimony that it seems to work. It's I would remind the body that we don't put an age restriction on this, but it's primarily utilized by our most fragile and our senior citizens out there. You can see the numbers statewide. We serve through this program about 2,000 individuals, families per year. Mr. Chairman, that's probably good enough on House Bill 5. Unless there are questions, we'd be glad to try to answer them. As I mentioned, in the bill itself, the language contained therein is actually in our statutes now. I might remind real quickly, Mr. Chairman, that if we reinsert this language, that will allow our constituents back home to utilize this particular tax relief program for this year with their IRS forms.
Thank you,
Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Senator Meyer, do you have a question?
Yes. The Health Department administers this, if I recall, and I want to make sure that's the way it was or is, because as I sat on appropriations a few years ago, this was one of the programs that they wanted to delete, and I was wondering if there was any discussion about whether or not we wanted to continue leaving that at the Health Department. They're essentially just a custodian for the funds, but this was a nice place where they could just cut it all out and meet their 8% reduction or help that. And I was just wondering whether or not there was any discussion on that. And I see that on the fiscal note, we've only expended $300,000 through the quarter of the tax year 2014, and it was appropriate $2.6 million. I was wondering if there's any discussion about the fiscal note, as far as that seems like that's a lot less than we have been using on this particular program. And whether I believe what was said was that all of this language is exactly the same as it was before, so we're not going to have any winners or losers. Is that correct?
Any other questions before Senator Landon raises to that? Seeing none, Senator Landon, would you like to respond?
Mr. Chairman, to answer the third question first, yes. There are no winners and losers. This language is as it has been. I will certainly chase down an answer for my friend at the back of the room with regard to the administering of the program. But no, I didn't. There was not testimony in front of our committee that it's handled by the Department of Health. We heard from assessors and Department of Revenue folks. I think that's where this program resides. And regarding the fiscal note, not a lot of conversation about the fiscal note either. I'll try to chase that down a little bit, Mr. Chairman, if we move this through to second reading.
Other questions, other comments in regard to House Bill 5? Senator Scott, go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, I think the Health Department involvement was that these forms are frequently passed out through the senior senators, and I believe they are funded with the Health Department's Department of Aging. So that's the involvement. It's kind of indirect at this point.
Other questions, other commentary? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 5, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 5 has passed committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 6. I'll ask that to be read in.
House Bill number 6, Airline Companies Assessment, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. It was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Which pleasure, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation and do pass on House Bill 6, Airline Companies Assessment. There were no standing committee amendments, and I turn the time over to explain the bill to good Senator from Fremont County, Senator Case.
Go ahead, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this kind of corrects a accidental repeal of a Title 37 public utilities statute in 2012. What it does is reinstates that the property of airline company used for the public transportation of passengers or property for hire will be statewide assessed under the category of property used for industrial purposes. This is the same category and same statewide assessment process that we use for pipelines, electric utilities, railroad companies, places that are all over the state. It is possible, I suppose, to tax airline company assets on the basis of local assessment, meaning your assessor would have to go out on January 1 and find out what kind of assets are there, Mr. Chairman, and figure that out. But as you can imagine, airline company assets move around a little bit, so it's much better to do this by schedule on a statewide basis, Mr. Chairman. It's worth, as I recall, between $200,000 and $300,000 to the state. It does clarify that this is at the industrial rate of 11.5%, and the assessors support the bill. The department supported the bill. No one testified against the bill, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, comments in regard to House Bill 6? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 6, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 6 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 9. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
House Bill number 9, Alternative Fuel Taxation, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinsey, Landon, and Peterson. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Thank you. There does appear to be an amendment. Senator Peterson, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report to do so with a do pass on House Bill 9, Alternative Fuel Taxation. And there is a Standing Committee Amendment. I'd ask for that to be read in at this time.
House Bill number 9, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 28, line 20.
Go ahead, Senator Peterson. Would you like to move the amendment?
I would move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 9. And I'll go ahead and address that on page 28 of the bill. And then I'll cover the rest of the bill after we address the amendment, Mr. Chairman. The committee thought it would be wise to, this was in regards to the bonding section on page 28. I'm talking line 18 through 23. On page 28, line 20, we insert the word sum of and up to after the sum of. So we insert up to on line 20. And on line 21, we also insert up to after or. And on line 22, we talk, we insert whichever is, or we delete, excuse me, whichever is greater. The idea there, Mr. Chairman, is basically the amount was a concern of the bonding requirement, and we were attempting to set that amount somewhat lower, more affordable for some of these distributors of these alternative fuels, and it basically gives the flexibility to the department, a little more flexibility to adjust that bonding requirement. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 9, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We are now back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 9, if you recall, it was last year that we talked a little about taxation of natural gas, liquid natural gas. It took care of a lot of these issues, but now we have other additional alternative fuels that we thought we needed to address as well as your Interim Revenue Committee. Issues such as we needed a better accurate definition for alternative fuels. We also needed to provide a model for distribution of alternative fuels. We had to better define the RAC or the point of taxation for these in relation to all of these alternative fuels. We had to address the concept of maybe the shrinkage credit. Defining the refiner of many of these alternative fuels. We had to address the home fueling question as we talk about electrical and the plug-ins. We addressed somewhat the idea of taxing plug-in electric vehicles and then trying to answer the question of whether these alternative fuels qualify for refunds. So those are the questions that the committee took up during this interim as we talked about these other alternative fuels and the taxation of those fuels. We start on page 1 under the definitions, line 16 through page 15, line 4. Those are all the definitions. And these definitions, they currently exist in statute, but we're taking somewhat of a more dramatic and different meaning as they relate to these alternative fuels that we're discussing in this bill. Alternative fuels, biodiesel blend, export, exporter, import, importer, motor fuels, rack, and refiner. Definitions that do not currently exist in statute but relate to the alternative fuels, such as bulk alternative fuel, compressed natural gas, diesel gallon equivalent, dispenser, E85, electric, end user, ethanol, gasoline equivalent, hybrid, and you can go on and on. So those what those definitions are trying to do is Mr. Chairman, I guess the saying is times are changing and we need to keep up with these alternative fuels as they come on board. 3917-302, this is on page 15, lines 6 through page 19, line 22. This is the administration and the confidentiality. There are not any proposed intent changes to this section or any changes to the language that appears in 3917-102, 39-17202. Proposed 39-17-303, imposition. This is page 20, lines 1 through page 24, line 9. During the interim study, the committee determined that this language should mirror articles 39-17-103 and 39-17203, thus levying the license tax, otherwise known as the LUST, or the penny levied on gasoline and diesel. On page 24, lines 11 through page 25, line 20, we talk about section 39-17304, taxation rate. In section 304, little A, total tax, this is page 24, line 13 through 20. During, again, the interim study, the committee determined that liquid petroleum gas, or LPG, and electricity would be measured per gallon, per gasoline gallon equivalent, when considering the taxation rate. Section 39-17-304, page 24, lines 22 through page 25, line 5, we talk about the license tax. During the interim study, the committee determined the license tax of 23 cents per gallon, gasoline gallon equivalent for compressed natural gas, and liquid petroleum gas, and electricity, and per diesel gallon equivalent for liquefied natural gas shall be collected. Page 25, lines 7 through 11, section 39-17304, too little I. During the study, the committee determined that the license tax of 4 cents a gallon, gasoline gallon equivalent for compressed natural gas, liquid petroleum gas, and electricity, and per diesel gallon equivalent for liquefied natural gas should also be collected. Moving on, during the study, the committee determined that this language should mirror Articles 39-17-103 and 39-17-203, thus levying the license tax, otherwise known as LUST, on this alternative fuel as well. And that was page 25, lines 13 through page 25, line 20. On page 25 of the bill, line 22, through page 26, line 18, we insert there are not any imposed, Mr. Chairman, there are not any proposed intent changes to this section, as it appears already in statutes 39-17-105 and 39-17-205. The next item is page 26, lines 20 through 33 to line 9, 39-17-306. This is regarding the licenses and permits. The committee determined that the alternative fuel suppliers, refiners, distributors, terminal operators, importers, and exporters must annually obtain a license to conduct business, as they similarly must when selling gasoline or diesel. On page 27, lines 13 through 28 to line 6, this was, again, licensing dealers. During the interim study, the committee determined that the alternative fuel dealers must annually obtain a license to conduct business, as they similarly do when selling gasoline. Page 28, lines 13 through 28 to line 16, this was the bonds. We determined that bonding should be required as it is within the other two fuel tax statutes. So bonding was going to be required. On page 28, lines 18 through 29, line 3, during the interim study, the committee determined that all licensees with a tax liability shall file with the Department of Bond in the sum of $50,000 or the equivalent of a licensee's taxability for 6 months, whichever is greater at the discretion of the department. And we had some concern, Mr. Chairman, over this section and thus the amendment. And I think that there's some more improvement there. And I think you'll see some amendments on the floor with this particular section of the bonding requirement. Page 33, lines 11 through page 46, line 14, we talk about the compliance collection procedures. This is talking about the shrinkage credit. That's on page 43, line 12. During the committee determined that shrinkage credit may apply to alternative fuels, as they do to the others. A distributor or importer who owns a bulk plant in this state to take a shrinkage credit of 1% on gross gallons, if applicable. Shrinkage credit may apply to some alternative fuels, as this process shall be more clearly defined in rules and regulations promulgated by the department. Enforcement, page 46. No one proposed intent changes to this section. Taxpayer remedies, page 51, line 7 through page 56, line 17. This was the taxpayer remedy. The committee determined that the end-user refund practices identified in 3917-109 and sections 3917-209 would apply to alternative fuel use. Page 56, statute of limitations. Again, no intent or changes to that language, as it appears already in the statutes mentioned, 3917-110 and 3917-210. Section 3917-311, page 57, line 11 through page 56, or 65, line 13, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. During the study, this past interim, the committee determined that alternative fuel tax revenue would be distributed as follows. All alternative fuel license taxes and fees related to liquefied natural gas, biodiesel, and renewable diesel shall be distributed in the same manner described in 3917-211 under diesel distribution. And then all alternative fuel license taxes and fees shall be distributed in the same manner described in 3917-11. That's under gasoline article distribution. With the exception of the registration of user fees distributed for motorboats, snowmobiles, and ATVs. Section 2 of the bill, page 65, lines 15 through page 65, line 17, under miscellaneous fees. During the interim study, the committee determined that a decal for plug-in electric vehicles defined in section 3917-301 shall be required, and the annual fee for the decal shall be $50. So that's the best solution we could come up with, as your interim committee on revenue was issuing a decal. And the decals are similar to surrounding states in that same area. Other options were discussed, but this was the best alternative that the revenue committee could come up with, is issuing these $50 decals for electric vehicles. Section 3917-101, page 66, line 4, the alternative fuel definition has been updated to as defined in 3917-301. Page 66, line 13, through page 67, line 20, under distribution. This amendment addresses a statutory conflict related to gasoline distribution. Repeal statutory language. This is page 68, lines 8, through page 68, line 9. The rate under subsection A of this section shall be applied on a gasoline gallon equivalent as specified in this subsection. The gasoline equivalent, or the gasoline gallon equivalent for non-liquefied compressed natural gas, is 5 66 hundredths pounds of CNG if the dispenser is capable of providing a reading in pounds, 126 67 hundredths standard cubic feet if the dispenser reads in cubic feet. So, hope you get some kind of a flavor of what the Revenue Committee was dealing with these alternative fuels. But that language is being repealed due to the information being captured in the proposed alternative fuel article. So, and the last item, Mr. Chairman, Section 3917-204E, the rate under subsection A of this section shall be applied on diesel gallon equivalent as specified in this subsection. That language is also being repealed due to the information being captured in the proposed alternative fuels article. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the best effort with the Revenue Committee on the interim study on taxation of alternative fuels, primarily electrical and whatever other fuels come up on board as time advances and alternative fuels come on board and are more utilized and used. So with that, Mr. Chairman, apologize for the long description of this bill, but that's the bill in essence, and I'd stand for questions.
Any questions? Comment? Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, page 66, plug-in electrical vehicles as defined in such for $50. Did that come out being an annual fee, or was that a one-time only fee?
Senator Peterson, if you'd like to answer that at a later time, we could do it on a future reading.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that that is an annual fee. And but there's also the question that, of course, when that fee is paid, it's in the licensing of that vehicle. So it might be a one-time fee, but I'll get back to you on that and make sure.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Any other questions? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 9, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. House Bill 9 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is...
There's
Yes. Mr. Majority Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee hold bag leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion has carried. I'm just going to leave myself.
Yeah, you guys just stand here. Was that right, Bill?
Standing committee reports. Standing committee reports.
February the 10th. 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 122, Workers' Compensation Permanent Disability, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott. Excuse Senator Kraft, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Any other reports you'd like to read in? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself back into committee of the whole to continue discussion on House bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. Back to Senator Anderson.
Going forward with these, or are we going to? Okay. Thank you. Committee Hull, come back to order. Next bill for our consideration, House Bill 86. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 86, Board of Cooperative Educational Services Meetings, sponsored by Representative Petroff.
Go ahead.
It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Pappas, and Raffas, excuse Senator Dockstader, Senator Cole, Chairman.
What's your pleasure, Senator Raffas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move it when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 86, Board of Cooperative Educational Service Meetings. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would yield to Senator Christensen for an explanation of the bill.
Go ahead, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 86 refers to the Board of Cooperative Educational Services Meetings, commonly known as BOCES. BOCES refers to the Wyoming Statute 212101, specifically on the Board of Cooperative Education Services Act, which allows for schools, school districts, and or colleges, community colleges, to work together to provide educational services such as college credit classes, vo-tech classes, adult education, and services for children with disabilities. What's the issue that this bill is addressing? In 2120105, it states that the meetings of the BOCES boards shall be held and conducted as provided by law for the meeting of the Board of Trustees of School Districts. The problem is the school board meeting law states that the boards must meet once per month. In general, BOCES funding runs through the school districts, so there is really no need to meet on a monthly basis to approve spending warrants. Financial obligations could easily be met without a monthly meeting. Many of the boards call their meeting together and then adjourn just to meet their statutory obligations. Some of the boards are a distance from one another, making the meetings even more challenging. Now, they can meet via conference, but to set up a conference call, it's just unnecessary and an additional burden to those volunteer boards. This does not prevent a BOCES board meeting from meeting monthly. It simply gives the boards with less need the ability to meet on a quarterly basis. I take you over to the bill itself. The meat of it is page 2. And on page 2, upon line 8, new language that says except as specifically provided herein, and that refers to the new language down on starting on line 12. At the end of the sentence, continuing on through line 16, the Board of the Cooperative Educational Service shall meet quarterly and at other times as may be desired, upon call of the chairman. The board shall not be required to meet at least one time per month. That's the bill. No fiscal impact or personnel impact. It's merely a little more respectful of our volunteers that serve on these boards. Leaves them the ability to do their business as necessary, but doesn't mandate that they show up every month.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions in regard to Senate or House Bill 86? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Rossa's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 86, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 86 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 73. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
House Bill number 73, Development of Education Standards, sponsored by Representative Harshman. It was referred to Committee number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, O2, Cole, Pappas, and Rothfuss. Excuse, Senator Dockstader, Senator Co-Chairman.
There is an amendment. Senator Rothfuss, would you like to go ahead, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd ask that the amendment be read in at this time. I need to move it first. I'm sorry. I'll move the... Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that I do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 73, Development of Education Standards. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that that be read in now.
House Bill 73, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, lines 4 through 11.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move a Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 73, and... I'll explain that as I yield to myself and explain the bill as well. Mr. Chairman, this is a request made by the State Board of Education in the amount of time under which it's mandatory for them to review and reassess their standards in certain content areas. The bulk of the bill is on page 1, where it's simply a change of once every 5 years to once every 10 years, that is a required review of standards in particular topic areas. So those topic areas might be language arts, they might be science, they might be mathematics. Currently under statute, the State Board is required every 5 years to reevaluate and reassess. The reality is, and what we heard from the State Board, is that once there is a change, it takes about 3 years to even fully implement those changes to then begin assessing whether or not those standards are up to speed or whether they need any changes. On a 5-year cycle, it's too frequent, particularly to the extent that I believe there are 10 different content areas that they have to review. Currently, one of the concerns is that, for example, mathematics and language arts are actually up at the same time. The State Board's concerned with that because it takes so much effort to review those standards. You do them at the same time. There's not enough lag between them, and it ends up being a pretty significant burden. By changing the number of years between required reviews, it eases some of that burden and allows a better staggering of the time frame. So, for example, math could be 1 year, and then language arts could be 3 years later when that process begins, and then perhaps science is 3 years after that. So you've got a better staggered approach, and there's not so much pressure at the same time. Mr. Chairman, along the same lines, it's not a requirement that 10 years be waited, but a requirement that a review be made every 10 years. So if the State Board of Education feels it's necessary to reopen a set of standards prior to that 10-year time frame, they can simply do so of their own accord. So this is a statutory obligation that we're scaling back in accordance with their request and with a lot of testimony that we heard in the Joint Education Committee indicates that we have a relatively unreasonable burden, and it's not consistent with the actual needs of the State Board of Education in the state of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, when we look at the amendment, the original legislation was simply change 5 to 10. On page 2 of the legislation, there was a lot more added that changes the process and makes a requirement for the process that the State Board, you can see on page 2, lines beginning on line 4. The State Board, in consultation with the State Superintendent, shall establish a process to receive input or concerns related to the student content and performance standards from various stakeholders, and then have a formal review by the Board. Mr. Chairman, this is something, first of all, that can be done already under rules and regulations between the superintendent and the State Board of Education. They've already been in discussion and dialogue as to what the best approach for that is. It's a little bit premature at this point to encode that in statute, so your Joint Education Committee felt that it was premature and that we should take this out, just go with the original intent of scaling it back to every 10 years, and if we need to change statute in the future, once they work out the details of what a good approach would be, then we can do that at a later date. So, Mr. Chairman, at this point in time, I would answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. If there are no questions, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 73, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, at this point in time, I'd answer any questions on the bill, the remainder being changing from 5 to 10 years, and I'd be happy to answer those questions.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I understand the presentation. I appreciate it. I just want to be sure, and I understand we're trying to make it more flexible to the State Board and the timing consequences and all those, but are we giving up our responsibility to ensure that it happens every 10 years? And what I don't want to see us do is we take it out of the statutes, and they choose for whatever reason not to think that it's a priority yet. A lot of us may feel like it is, us being the general constituents of our state, our people, anybody out there that has those concerns, yet they say, well, we don't have to do it except every 10 years. We're giving up our obligation to make sure it happens, and I want to be sure that we don't do that. This is very important. If you feel like it's more important to have the flexibility, then understand that they have to do it every 5 years. I'd like to have a little more comments and discussion about that.
Any other questions before Senator Rothfuss responds? Go ahead, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll go on the record as saying, first of all, that the recommendation by the State Board of Education was 8 years. That was what they brought to us on the Joint Education Committee in a request from us. The original sponsor of the legislation thought 10 years was more reasonable because they can certainly come back and do it within 8 years. It still is an affirmative obligation in whatever that time window is that they have to review it in that number of years. So currently every 5 years they have to go through the process. If we change it to 10 years, then every 10 years they'll have to go through. So we're not removing that obligation. We're changing the timeline. As I mentioned, though, the majority floor leader, for example, is uncomfortable with that timeline. 8 years was the request by the State Board of Education as being an amount of time that would allow for that 3-year phase-in and then a reasonable amount of time for assessment and then a reevaluation, and that would be reasonable as well. But the 5 years, in their view, is unworkable at this time. There's certainly flexibility in the number of years, Mr. Floor Leader. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Additional comments, questions? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Roth's motion when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 73, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 73 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 122. I'll ask that be read in at this time.
Point of order.
Yeah, it's not on the board.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I believe 47 should be next, according to the board.
Okay, well.
Mr. Chairman, apparently the boards are different.
Well, apparently the stack is different. Well, which one do you want to go by? We'll go.
Mr. Chairman, the next bill is House Bill 122.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead and please read the bill.
House Bill number 122, Workers' Compensation Permanent Disability. Sponsored by Representative Bob Nicholas. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott. Excuse, Senator Kraft, Senator Scott, Chairman.
What's the pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 122 do pass with no standing committee amendments, and I yield to Senator Perkins for an explanation of this good little House bill.
With Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 122 comes to you. There's a problem that's occurred and seems to occur in some of these workers' compensation cases, either through some rulings or an administrative mistake in the system. What's happened is ultimately when a person gets a total temporary disability through a permanent total disability in the workers' compensation program, there's been, with the language you see that's stricken out at the top of page 2, when they're talking about less previous awards, there's another element of permanent disability, which is what's called a physical impairment. And so what was going on is for years the custom was you would get your physical impairment at some point. That was one thing. And then if you got your, in this case we're talking about permanent total disability, that was something else. The physical impairment impairs you for what's happened to your body. The total disability is a replacement for income and loss of your earnings capacity. And so what started to happen in some places in the state was these awards are being figured. They're taking the total permanent disability and they're deducting the physical disability element from, and then they're spreading that payment out over the 80-month period. And so what's happened is people are getting substantially less than they used to get, and what everybody's intended, this law will make clear that past practice continues on and that these folks get what they're entitled to under the statute has been interpreted for many years, and would ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions in regard to the bill? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 122, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. House Bill 122 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 47. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
House Bill number 47, Shipment of Wine, sponsored by Representative Hunt. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, Von Fladern, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
What's your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 47, Shipment of Wine. There are no standing committee amendments. To further discuss the bill, I would ask you to call on Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll try to talk through the banter back here about me being related to Dean Martin and a few other things, Mr. Chairman. But what this particular bill does is that it takes a shipment of wine from 18 liters to 36 liters, and it allows for any household in the state to directly order this rather than through a liquor license holder. And that's in committee that was suggested that that's really the kind of the current practice. We're just codifying the current practice. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that this will help a few folks be in compliance with the law. However, Mr. Chairman, I will say is that I do have one member of my household immediate family that the 36 could be 360 and they might even break the law then, Mr. Chairman. So, but I think this will help a lot of folks, and because there's a lot of different kinds of wines out there. That's just really, really good wines, and you don't necessarily have the ability to enjoy those different kinds of wines. And if you go on vacation, a lot of times people find that special bottle of wine and they want to be able to order it when they come home, and this really helps.
Thank you. Are there questions? Okay. Majority Leader Bebout.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. Is this just for those wines made in the U.S., or does it go to international wine?
Senator Rothfuss is up next, and then...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, by my calculation, this is 48 bottles of wine. So my question then is, if we order one bottle of wine a week, what do we do for the other 4 weeks of the year?
Question.
Any productive response? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the committee will rise to report, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 47, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 47 has passed committee of the whole. Next, House Bill for our consideration, House Bill 49, I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Powder it.
House Bill number 49, confidentiality of participants involved in execution, sponsored by Representative Walters. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, Von Fladeren. No, Senator Escobel. Senator Christensen.
Chairman. What's your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 49. There are no standing committee amendments. To further discuss the bill, I would ask that you call on Senator Burns.
Senator Burns, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I present to you House Bill 49, confidentiality of participants involved in executions. The title basically says what the bill is about. This is something that over the past few years we've been discussing the issue of executions owing to the shortage of drugs used because of the European Union putting a ban on those drugs being imported into the United States, basically trying to affect domestic policy in the United States. This bill goes to whether or not we can get those or not. In years past, any party that was involved in an execution was kept confidential, and their name and so forth and identity was kept confidential. But through various Freedom of Information Act decisions by judges, the question has arisen whether or not those names could be gotten. And given the coarseness of politics in the last number of years, we really don't want those people to be harassed at home or their children or their wives identified or anything. What this does is this bill allows for that confidentiality to stay where it belongs, and that is confidential.
Questions? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 49, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. House Bill 49 has passed the committee of the whole. We will now go to the majority leader's feedback.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
Amendment to
motion has passed.
To the person being executed. And then the executed can take their chances.
You have any messages?
So they can't see each other.
We're going to write to the budget? Oh, that's okay.
And then it's been.
Will the reading clerk please read the committee of the whole report?
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Joint Resolution 3, do pass amended. House Bill 5, do pass. House Bill 6, do pass. House Bill 9, do pass amended. House Bill 86, do pass. House Bill 73, do pass amended. House Bill 122, do pass. House Bill 47, do pass. And House Bill 49, do pass, Senator Anderson, 02, Chairman.
Chairman Anderson.
Mr. President, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole to consider only budget bill, the only budget bill, Senate File 1.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted.
May the whole come back to order. The reading clerk will read the Senate File, Senate File 1. I think, see, I have a copy of that here.
Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government. Sponsored by the Appropriations Committee.
What's your pleasure, Committee Chair Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it will do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 1. Mr. Chairman, a couple of preparatory comments, if I could.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have... should have several different documents available to you in considering this budget, this supplemental budget bill. You should have, as passed out before, the hand color, colored sheet that has the tranches as set up. Column one being what is money that is available to us today. Column two being hopeful money that would be available to us on July 1, 2015. And column three, hopeful money, contingent money that would be available to us on July 1, 2016. You should also have the most updated goldenrod. And I've been referring to it several times over this week, and you'll see that right now traditional funds available for appropriation were in the hole $600,000 approximately. In addition, I've had passed out to you a summary sheet. Some people call it a cheat sheet. I would ask you that to take a look at that. You will notice on that there is a disclaimer on this summary sheet. The purpose of this summary sheet is to assist, easy for me to say, right, is to assist you in following along with your committee as we work the bill itself. That disclaimer basically says that this is an internal working draft summarizing action in development of Senate File 1 and House Bill 1. For official information related to the budget bill, please refer to the budget bill. So you should have Senate File 1 in front of you and, of course, your summary sheets. Members of the Senate, this is a supplemental budget, so we already have a biennial budget. And so as we go through here, you are going to see that certain agencies are not in the budget bill, primarily because they didn't ask for a supplemental budget request or the Joint Appropriations Committee denied whatever rec that may have been from the governor concerning a particular agency. So as you will note, to just start off, for instance, the officer of the governor appears on your summary sheet, but it does not appear in the budget bill. And I will explain, or members of the committee will explain as we go through what happened, so at least you know what action the committee took, and or there was no need to take any action. And then we will move through the various sections of this budget, and the committee has been assigned particular sections to carry, and we will move through this as expeditiously as possible. Having said that, I'm hopeful that we can get through the agencies, maybe get through CapCon, or at least the CapCon section of the bill, and then we get into Section 300s, and we'll probably take at least Section 300s up tomorrow. Maybe we can get through CapCon, depending on how much discussion there is as we move through. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to go. Let's get ready to rumble.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If you may, maybe you could explain as to how you're going to move this each section and then call for the question so that they can kind of get into the rhythm of the process.
Members of the Senate, you will first see that there are various sections. For instance, Section 1, I will move that section, I'll explain that section, and then move to close that. And then when we get into Section 2, which is the various agencies, I will move Section 2, and then we will go to each subsection. Like, for instance, the governor is 002, if he was in this budget, or 001. He's not in the budget, so 002 would be, or 002 is Secretary of State. I would move that. We'd have some questions, and I'd ask for a vote on that. Once we get through all of those sections, then I'll move to close the whole section 2 and then we would be done.
Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, question. I've got a question in section of the budget that's not in here. The question basically is, why isn't it in there? What's the appropriate time in the presentation to ask that particular question?
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The appropriate time, and I would yield to the Appropriations Committee, but in the number sequence, when that pops up before the number that's after, would be the appropriate time to call for the question. Sure. And discuss that. You don't call for the question, just to discuss it. And, Mr. Chairman, the other thing that I think would be helpful, if the Appropriations Chairman, if there are letters or requests in there that, like, on the first one, which is a section for the governor, that the Appropriations Committee denied certain things that were requested, that we are made aware of that. So we'd be sure and see everything that went on during the Appropriations Committee discussion on the supplemental budget bill.
Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's correct. Maybe I didn't do a very good job of explaining it, but that's what I was trying to say. For instance, when we get to the Office of the Governor, I would at least explain what we did. And even though the governor is not in the budget itself, and yes, he is in the budget, because when he gets back into the Section 300s, there's a number of things that happen. Having said that, I hope everybody's clear. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move Section 1 of the bill, which is on page 1. Section 1 is basically definitions. And it takes you through over to page 5, line 19. Unless there's any questions, I would call for the question on Section 1.
Questions on Section 1? Hearing none. All those in favor of Section 1 of the budget bill, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are now back on the bill.
Move to close Section 1. I think that's the way I have to do that. Isn't that correct? I move to close it now. I move to close Section 1, all those, and ask for the favorable vote.
All those in favor of closure of Section 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Section 1 is now closed. Back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 2 of the bill, which begins on the bottom of page 5, and it shows you the various sections, and we're going to go through each of those that are amended in this supplemental budget. So the first thing that I would do is call your attention to the Office of Governor on your summary sheet. You will see that what JAC did with regards to the governor's office, the governor had a request for $297,684 in general fund to replenish the disaster contingency fund. JAC denied that. There is currently $438,000 in that fund. The governor wanted it up back up to $750,000, his supplemental budget. But you will also note, as we move through, that in tranche 3 of the sheet, we do include $3 million for the governor's disaster contingency. Move Section 2, which is Secretary of State. With regard to Section 2, Secretary of State, there were two things that were done. One was that JAC adopted the governor's rec for $735,000 in general fund for hosting an operation support of a voter registration election management system. That's in compliance with HAVA.
Can we close
Can we close 001? 001 was never in the budget, so there was no reason to close it. We're having a side dialogue here. In addition, with regards to the Secretary of State, we needed to fund the $51,700 from the general fund for publication of last year with regards to a constitutional amendment. So we accepted the governor's rec, and I would move to close Section 002 unless there's any questions.
Are there any questions on Section 002? All those in favor?
Or just, I guess maybe it's move the adoption. Move adoption of 002.
In regard to the adoption of 002...
You didn't talk about this. Mm-hmm.
I did.
All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt Section 002, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 002 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section
004.
And I'll let you bring up.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move Section... just a moment. I do need to explain Section 003. It's not in the budget, but you'll see on your summary sheets, State Auditor, the JAC denied the governor's rec with regards to $8 million in general fund for temporary detention placements. These are Title 25. But what we did do is we added, and it'll come up later on in the budget in Section 308, we added a footnote that for personnel services transfers, directing the Department of Health to use its 100 series savings to offset shortfall and to provide a report of its Title 25 cost. Is there any discussion with regard to the State Auditor? If not, move Section 004. State Treasurer. It's on page 8 of your budget bill. And I got to get, you also should have your supplemental budget available to you. What happened, what we did with the State Treasurer came to us with some personnel change requests. First of all, the chief investment officer, which is O-O-2, that's the position, is vacant. That's we lost our chief investment officer to the state of Nebraska. The state auditor or state treasurer asked that he have up to $250,000 to hire a new chief investment officer. We granted that. He also had requested an increase in the salary for 0021 executive management senior investment officer to take that up to $152,000. So what we did is we granted that. He also asked for a senior investment officer that a senior investment officer equities, which was vacant. We chose not to fund that. He asked for another position, and we chose not to do that. So the total amount that we approved for the state treasurer was, you'll see on page 8, is $299,371. Any questions with regard
further,
to state treasurer?
Further discussion, I believe I'll go to Senator Meyer. Go ahead, regard section 4, Senator Meyer.
Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure that if we're not penny wise and pound foolish on not providing for these positions that the state treasurer asked. I recall the discussions that we had while I was on appropriations prior to that, and I think the treasurer wanted to build his bench. So if you have somebody that is your chief investment officer and they essentially go to greener pastures or for whatever reason are no longer there and they can't do their duties, that you don't have that lag time, that you've got somebody that can back up and make some of the critical decisions. And, folks, we're talking about, you know, $17, $18 billion worth under management. I'm not exactly sure how much we pay in management fees to different professional managers out there to manage our different portfolios and asset classes, but it's probably $30, $40, $50 million. And then we're saying that we're supposed to be able to not hire anyone that understands what these folks are talking about. Because, you know, it's an entirely different vocabulary, different than any of us use in our daily lives as far as the investment vocabulary. And $250,000 isn't too much. It's probably at the very lower end for a chief investment officer or somebody that has these qualifications. And then essentially we denied any bench. So the next time we lose our chief investment officer, we'll be in the same position that we are right now. No one to help make those decisions or contracting for it at maybe 3, 4, 50 times the cost.
Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, following on that thought, it seems to me that we're developing a systematic problem where the upper levels of our middle management, you know, the people who are just below the agency head level or who are running some of the major divisions in the larger agencies, we simply are not paying competitive salaries to get the quality of managers we need at that level. I've seen it in a number of other agencies. Frankly, I've seen it in the Game and Fish Commission and Game and Fish Department, where we're just not competitive for that level of personnel. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm not so much suggesting we need to expand the budget as we need to do some reallocating within and pay that level of management a good deal better, even if it means a few less people. Because I think you, if you get better quality there, you maybe can reduce the number of people that you need. And I'm wondering how much, this is just the first instance we've hit of this, how much of that sort of thing did the Appropriations Committee see throughout the state government? Am I right in thinking that we're developing a systematic problem there, that those salaries are not being done well?
Further discussion? Senator Rothfuss, before the chairman responds. Go ahead, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those lines, I'd ask the Appropriations Committee members if they had heard testimony on what a comparable staffing, what a comparable administrative cost would be for an entity that was managing a portfolio of the same scale that our treasurer is managing, so that we understand how this would be done in the private sector and we understand what resources would be required to hire competent staff and personnel in the private sector, so we really do know what we need, how many staff we need, and what we should be paying those staff members. I'd appreciate understanding that better.
Questions kind of in the same vein.
Sure, I can answer.
Let's let Chairman go ahead and speak to those questions, and I'll go to the others. Go ahead, Senator Ross.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Try to answer those questions. Initially, what was asked for was four positions. Two were vacant, and one was new. Initially, your Appropriations Committee reduced the amounts across the board for these positions, and then we came back in the round robin and worked out a compromise with the treasurer. What the treasurer really needed, and we funded his request for the chief investment officer, the average salary in the area was around $250,000. Was it 200? About $200,000. We approved that the treasurer could go up to 250 so that we could get a competent CIO. One investment officer, we approved moving that up pursuant to the treasurer's request. The other investment officer, that office had been vacant for several years. So we chose in this supplemental budget not to deal with that one. And we chose not to fund a new position. And that was a compromise that was worked out with the treasurer. So I hope that answers your question. But, you know, we basically recognize that we need competent people in the treasurer's office. And we need to pay them the commensurate salary with that. And we have done that in this particular section. I would say one other thing with regard to this section, that we denied the governor's rec with regards to a general fund appropriation of almost $2.6 million with regards to a severance tax distribution overpayment that we have been carrying on the books for a number of years. And we just felt, given it shows up on, and the concern of the auditor was, or the treasurer was, that, you know, it shows up and could affect our rating, but it's been there for years. Part of the problem is we haven't been able to figure out who we overpaid and how do we get that money back. So we just chose at this point in time, given the nature of our budget, not to deal and denied that rec with regards to the treasurer.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I do want to go back and talk about the treasurer staff. I think that conversation really deserves a little more attention. Folks, as I recall, and I think it's always the case, remember that with respect to the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund, the state pays about, I want to say, somewhere between, I think it's about $14 million, but somewhere between 12 and about $16 million a year to fund advisors. So we hire major companies to help us diversify the portfolio. We pay that company a fee. They then go out and hire managers for different allocations of the portfolio, and they receive the fees. And the same is true for the retirement account. And the retirement account, as I recall last time, also was paying in the range of $15 million per year for professional services. So then you come back to the issue with respect to how do you staff your office? Well, within the treasurer's office, you still need to have qualified people paying attention to some of your fixed income, bond allocations, and your cash deposits. They also need to have skill sets in trying to review and meet with, discuss with your fund managers, with the company that is overseeing it. And it is true that trying to attract and maintain highly qualified people to become a professional career person handling those kind of funds is difficult. Because, frankly, no matter how much you pay them, while they're sitting in and managing almost $20 billion of assets, and when I say that, I mean they've got the estate funds of, say, $10 billion worth of funds that are pooled. You've got about $6 billion in the retirement, into the PMTF, about $3 billion into the Common School Permanent Land Fund, and they're often consulted with respect to the retirement account. So that becomes your resume builder. You build that resume, and in time, there are going to be people that are going to want to take your skill sets, move them on, and pay monies that we probably cannot always have. Keep to maintain. Now, there are people that will choose to work for the state as a career and be happy with the career level of salary. And with respect to those folks, they're a blessing to the state. It's great to have them. The question that came back by our colleague here, though, is that so you recognize that you can't pay these folks the kind of salaries that are going to keep them from moving to much larger states or pension plans or to Wall Street. But we can pay good salaries to get very skilled people to stay with us for a reasonable amount of time, and they might make a career of it. But you expect that, so what is that salary? And the $250,000 range is sort of what the gut check is, that we ought to be able to get qualified people to do these jobs, and knowing that they may leave. Maybe they choose to stay with Wyoming as a career. But the question that we need to ask, and that is, if that's what your plan is to hire people in this range of $200,000, which is more than $250,000, which is more than most state employees would receive under any job in the state, except for some extraordinary jobs that exist. So then the question is, do you have a bench so that when that person leaves, somebody moves in and you keep hiring it so you know that you're going to have a progression? It's still hard to keep them because maybe they leave together as a team, they go different directions, and there's no perfect way to do it. But I think the question was, we understand that we can't compete with Wall Street, we can't compete with some of the larger pension plans. We will always have to look to people to find competent people, and this may be their training ground, but what are we doing to keep the succession plans going so that we're not always relying simply on the treasurer as the training person for the successor, because the treasurers are elected, they may or may not bring the skill sets that you need to train.
Any further discussion? Senator Rothfuss, Section 4.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still not comfortable, and perhaps we can have more explanation on in later debate. When I look at the budget and see the proposal that we have to have basically four seniors, a chief investment officer, senior investment officer for fixed income, senior investment officer for equity, senior investment officer for alternatives, that seems like a reasonable philosophy when you're looking at $20 billion of assets that are under your oversight. Even if we're outsourcing a lot of the management, you still have to have the responsibility for $20 billion in assets. You're building a bench with three that can take over the one position when that one position needs replacement and backfill. If I'm managing a corporation or some other entity with $20 billion in assets, Mr. Chairman, I probably am going to hire a lot more than four people to oversee it. But recognizing the way that we operate, I can see and understand the fact that we're outsourcing a lot of that expertise, but we still have to have in-house. And I'm still not comfortable yet, Mr. Chairman, with us saying we're good with two. And my question then would be, what is the intended sharing of responsibilities? What was the compromise that was reached, and what's the approach the Treasurer is going to take to compensate for not having this many when we're trying to develop this portfolio, move it forward, and have proper sharing of responsibilities for the assets?
Further discussion on Section 4.
Go ahead.
I'll go to Senator Wasserberger, member of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to remind the body, we have nine full-time positions there. We're adding funding for increases in salaries and three new positions. And currently we have about 34 different managers out there that they supervise, and expending a lot of money on those managers. So I think what the JAC did is appropriate, and it creates a significant bench, hopefully, in the future.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I want to renew my question. Is, you know, this is the first instance we've hit of this, but I suspect we have a much more systematic problem through the whole state government of not paying the upper levels of our middle management competitive salaries and getting in trouble on that. And my question is, did you see some more of this? And I'm wondering if this wouldn't be an appropriate interim topic for the JAC to look at in preparation for the full budget a year from now.
Questions on the same line. We can kind of deal with this line. Senator Hastert was up first, then we'll go to Senator Meyer, I believe. I hope these are in the same line, and then the chairman can respond. Go ahead, Senator Hastert.
I think in the same spirit and same line, Mr. Chairman. I think it's been that, you know, the JAC and a lot of the this comment is relevant for this section as well as many other sections. You know, we certainly took the position that this is a supplemental budget. I think there was, looking at the need and emergencies kind of thing, and whether this is appropriate for a supplemental budget. I don't think anybody really believes that maybe down the road or in a regular budget cycle that this wouldn't be a perfectly appropriate type of thing, of action to take and to increase these. I think the tall senator kind of hit on some of the thinking, at least my personal mindset of taking a look at this through the interim and be ready for the budget session on these kind of issues. But I think that you're going to see that a lot throughout the budget, and a lot of the denials was, you know, is this appropriate for the budget session?
Senator Meyer, same line, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think that one of the ways that we may approach this, Mr. Chairman, and I'll talk to the Treasurer and see what his thoughts are, is that perhaps the active managers, ladies and gentlemen, over the course of the last few years haven't been getting the alpha that they needed to get on their investments. And so the possibility would exist is that maybe we could move to part of our equities into stock index funds. That would reduce the management fees. and free up more than enough money to provide for the expertise that we need in the treasurer's office to manage all of the funds. And so I'll do a little discussion on that. We may not be able to get something together during this budget cycle in the next few days, but I think certainly in an interim that's something we can look at, because frankly active managers just haven't been performing as well as regular index funds.
Majority floor leader, and then we'll go back to the chairman.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just another thing, too, to answer the question about the middle managers, and maybe the committee could help me, but I seem to recall in our budget bill that we did last year, we put some money in there for merits that the governor had some responsibility to distribute, and so in a lot of ways that was designed to help in that arena. And I also believe that that was not fully spent and that you did go in and take some of that money to spend other places. So what that tells me is that we stepped up to the concerns. We presented the money there for the governor to have that latitude, and he used some, but did not use all of it. So if I'm correct in that or stand corrected, I'd appreciate the chairman of the Appropriations Committee to comment
Chairman
on
Ross.
It.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The majority floor leader is absolutely correct. In fact, we used some of that money that was for retention that wasn't used so that we could help balance the budget. With regard to the treasurer's office, though, I want to tell you, we did step up to the plate. And so when they provided to us a salary statistical comparison, so for a chief investment officer, the average top range for a chief investment officer is $234,000. We've allowed up to $250,000 to be competitive. The same is true, and the same kind of example occurs with the other position, the senior investment officer. So understand that while this money comes out of a special revenue, which is basically earnings, it does have a hit on the general fund. And so that's what occurred here with regards to the state treasurer's office. And with that, if there's no other questions, I move to adopt Section 004, State Treasurer.
Further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Ross' motion to adopt Section 004, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 4 has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee hold beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion has carried.
Do we have any?
Good job.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand recessed until 1:30 p.m.
1:30. Announcements. Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will be really hustling to get our bills done. So at 12:15, we will be up in S-18 to consider House Bill 27, engrossed, NRC agreement, state authorization, House Bill 60, engrossed, trust company amendments, House Bill 54, engrossed, corrective action, account distribution.
Senator Case.
With pleasure, Mr. President. Your committee number 7, Corporations, in order to accommodate the abbreviated schedule tomorrow, or the early schedule, will come in at 7 a.m. in room S-19. We're going to hear House Bill 30, engrossed, deposits and depositories, House Bill 42, engrossed, unclaimed property, merchant stored value cards, House Bill 63, unclaimed property advertising, House Bill 35, boards and commissioners, removal of appointed members. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet upon adjournment in rooms S-14 to consider the following bills. House Bill 74, engrossed front license plate requirement. House Bill 120, engrossed tribal license plates. House Bill 115, engrossed vehicle registration timing. House Bill 100, engrossed highway funding.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your travel committee number 6 will meet tomorrow morning, and the committee members note, 7:30 a.m. in S-14 to consider House Bill 135, engrossed lifetime archery licenses, and House Bill 136, engrossed interstate game tag exemption meat processors.
Any further announcements? You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stand in recess until 1:30.